Welcome back to Supporting Both Ends of the Lead. I'm Caroline, a certified animal behaviourist.
And I'm Dr. Linda Blair, a clinical psychologist.
We're here to bring you today's double dose of well-being for you and your dog.
And it's time to get started, don't you think?
At the time of recording today's episode, we're at the beginning of February. And February brings us the sort of feeling of love, the focus on relationships. Everywhere you turn, you'll see hearts and Valentine's messages. But love, it's quite a big concept. Linda, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, relationships is one thing. Then there's feelings underneath relationship, and there's love as one of those feelings. We think of love as a sort of like a beautiful flower that just blooms all by itself. And love is not like that. Passion is. I don't know how many people out there know the difference between passion and love, but they will if I explain this. Passion is that instant attraction you get to somebody else when you absolutely have to be with them. You may think it's love, but what it is it's completely about survival. It's hormones and it's about scent, S-C-E-N-T, that kind of scent. What on earth am I talking about? Well, when you are instantly attracted to another person, that magical thing that you think is falling in love, what you're smelling without knowing it is an immune system in the other person that is as different from your own as it can be. Why would that be attractive? Because if you then had a baby together, your baby would have the most immunities possible. Do you see? So it has nothing to do with how good looking they are, how much they remind you of something you've always wanted to, someone you've always wanted to fall in love with, anything like that. It's about producing a baby such that your own genes are likely to survive. And this works even in same-sex relationships, same-gender relationships where you don't intend, or even in different gender relationships where you don't intend to produce a baby. That's still what clicks on in the back of your brain and makes you so attracted to that other person. But it doesn't last. It 6 weeks is usually the maximum for that kind of passionate being attached to someone else. And you may wake up and say, oh my God, who is this other person? I don't know who this is. I don't find them someone I want to spend time with in the future. And that's when passion is wearing off and you have a choice. Would I fall in love with this person? That's when love starts. And love costs. It's effortful. It's hard work. It never stops being hard work, but it's the most rewarding thing you can possibly do. And I'm sure that's true, you know, not in terms of mating, but in terms of building safety and wonder with your dog. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. That just, you know, relationships with our dogs, as you'll have heard me say before, just aren't smooth sailing. We're not always on a journey from A to B. There will be setbacks and knockbacks, and we do have to put effort into our dogs if we want an emotionally stable dog, if we want a well-trained dog, if we want a dog who is easy to live with. We need to put time and effort and nurturing and support, and I guess most importantly, understanding into that relationship.
And can I add patience? Because I don't know how many of you out there listening have heard of the Stockholm syndrome, but it's based on the fact that whenever it was because of a kidnapping in Stockholm, and to everyone's surprise, the kidnapped became very attached to their kidnappers. What we discovered from that, and it's happened on many occasions since in psychological research, is that the intensity of emotion is what bonds people, not whether it's positive or negative. Now, I'm not encouraging you to have a lot of negative relationships at all, but what I'm saying is the more work you have to put into your relationship, the more problems you encounter, the more rewarding and intense will be the love you feel. And I know this because Caroline, I'm talking dogs here, is Caroline, who helped me through a dog with enormous problems. And I loved that dog more than I think I've loved any dog. And I didn't know what was happening at the time, but it was because of the challenges that Caroline helped us work through.
Yeah. And I think when we have a dog, I often say this to clients I work with, when we have a dog who does have big challenges, it can actually be a gift in a way, a gift that creates that connection unlike any other you will have with another dog.
Yeah. And those of you out there who are parents are probably thinking, yeah, you know, actually, it was my child with the most issues that now I feel, you know, so much overwhelming feeling for because I had to work so hard with them. Now, I do draw a line. I am not talking about relationships which are abusive. There are relationships you need to get out of, and I'm not talking about those. But in terms of being able to work together through difficulty, or as M. Scott Peck put it, he's the guy who wrote The Road Less Traveled, which was a bestseller in America for years. Was an American psychiatrist. He said, love is the will to extend yourself for the purpose of nurturing someone else. So it's hard work, and the harder the work, the deeper the love.
I just think that's beautiful. And I think we are, as pet parents, like the ones who are going to be listening today, hopefully on their dog walks with us, we are there to be that nurturing support for our dogs because we've chosen to bring them into our homes and we've chosen to create that safe space for them. And in turn, I think it's quite a special, unique relationship because it's probably one of the only, perhaps alongside cats, but really the only relationship where two mammals are of different species are really feeling a sense of love for each other.
Yeah, I know. That's so special. Of course, my focus is on people relationships, but I just stand in awe at dog-person relationships because it is so rare to cross species with that kind of depth. And I think it's really important what you just said a minute ago, Caroline, or you implied anyway, which is that loving is a choice. You know, passion isn't a choice. You don't have any conscious control over the passion you feel. That's directed by your back in your amygdala, back in your basic brain. But love is a choice, and it's a choice to keep going. As I say, there are times when you have to leave if it's an abusive relationship, but otherwise, it's a choice to work through difficulty, knowing how rewarding that difficulty, the resolution of that difficulty will be. And that reminds me of something. I've always told you, Caroline, that love is about oxytocin, you know, about feeling safe. You release all this love hormone, this bonding feeling. But you said something else to me recently, that it's more than that. Can you remind us all?
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, when we talk about oxytocin, that sort of love hug hormone that we know is actually created with dogs and us, like when we look into the eyes of a puppy, for example, we get that same level of oxytocin as when we look into the eyes of a newborn baby. And yes, studies have shown that, which is incredible. However, in our relationship with our dogs, it's important to know that for them, dopamine is another really important hormone to experience. So the oxytocin system really needs that dopamine system to be working alongside it, so that we get that really continuous pro-social behavior from the dog. Because when we look back at, say, wolves and their relationship with humans, we know that they have about 99% similar DNA to our domesticated dogs. The difference is this pro-social part where the dogs are really looking to continually have those relationships with us. And so having that balance of where the dog is not only getting the affection and the, you know, touch if they enjoy it and sort of support and feeling of security from us, but they're also getting reward systems. So whether that be they're getting reinforced for behaviors that you do with them, or they're getting reinforced by being allowed outlets for natural behaviors, for example. But both of those, I think, are really importantly interlocked.
And I'm so glad you said that, because you brought up for me a whole I'm thinking of a kite with a long tail. You brought up that tail for me of the other things that are so important in a loving relationship that is to last. Because remember, I said you continually have to work at it in human. I'm going to human now. And you're right. Dopamine is important. You need to feel valued in that relationship for you to have the motivation to want to continue. It's very, you can do it, but it's very hard if you don't feel valued. And how do we register value? Well, a very basic way is in our facial expressions. So if you can be aware that you smile, even maybe if you don't feel like it. And Caroline, when she smiles, it makes me smile, you see. So I'm sure that when we're recording together, so I'm sure that you would notice that in your relationships too. And when we smile, even if we didn't feel happy before we smiled, when we smile, especially called the Duchenne smile, the one where you the corners of your mouth lift up and you show a bit of your teeth. I'm doing it. That's why I sound funny. You release serotonin and your own mood lifts. So you reward yourself as well as giving gratification to the other person, because they're saying, oh, that mattered what I did. I'm important to you. And the other way we show that reciprocity, that we are feeling that we value the other person and that we appreciate they value us, is through what we say. There's a researcher in America, in Oregon, called John Gottman, who has been working, I think it's now 40 years or something like that, on couple relationships. And he's very scary. He can take a video clip of 20 minutes where he asks a newly gotten together couple to discuss a problem they haven't sorted out yet. And he can tell with 90% accuracy whether they'll be together in 5 years. Is that scary? And maybe it's 80%, but it's huge. Anyway, the point is that he then tells you the things that matter. And one of the very most important things that I'd like to say today, because I don't like to overload you with lots of little things, so you think, well, which thing is most important? I think this is most important, is when you need to criticize your partner or your child or your friend, that you begin the conversation or begin your comments with something genuinely positive. You can then go to the criticism, but by beginning with something positive, you start them, A, paying attention, and B, feeling valued. And he says people who don't do that are much more likely to split up than people who remember to start with something they value in the other person. So smiling and thinking about how you phrase what you need to say to your partner, your child, your friend. Those things are the building blocks of love.
That's fantastic. And that fits so well with what I was going to say is something to sort of for our wonderful listeners here to focus on, is the things that our dogs do naturally that we like, to pay attention to those, because we humans tend to, particularly with another species who can't speak to us, we tend to focus on the challenges, the things that dogs do wrong, when they annoy us, when they're being, over the top when you've got visitors over, or they are scratching at your leg for attention when you're trying to chill out to a movie, or bigger behavioral challenges like reacting to other dogs or people, for example. We focus on all those little things, those niggly things. But when our dog is sitting there chewing its own chew rather than your table leg, or they're sitting there nice and calm and relaxed on their bed rather than trying to get up onto your lap, those times we ignore our dogs and we go, oh, right, minute's peace. And we focus on ourselves and how that's rewarded us. But we need to think about how we can reinforce those moments and those behaviors for our dogs, so that not only do we feel more positive about those moments, and they get more reinforcement into ourselves. But also our dogs get that dopamine of feeling like they've got something right with us. And then you can follow it up with some food or some strokes or whatever it might be, if you'd like to further instill that sort of feeling of oxytocin for them.
Well, not only that, I was going to stop and shut up and give you even more chance, but this is so exciting because you've reminded me of something else that's so important. And this is when you're working with young children. For those of you who have young kids, I get a lot of referrals of people that are saying, I can't control my child's tantrums. You know, she gets so frustrated, or he gets so frustrated so easily. And it's a complicated issue I won't go into entirely. But one of the important things here is that what we do as parents, naturally, because we're usually tired most of the time, is that when the child is behaving quietly, you know, playing with their blocks or something, watching something or something like that, we think, oh, thank God, I got a break. Can you go in and get a cup of coffee? So they're getting nothing for that. But then when they have a tantrum, you rush in and you may not be, you know, friendly. You may be saying, quiet, be quiet, calm down. But it's still attention. And attention is more important to a child than anything. So what I teach parents to do, first of all, is exactly what you were saying with your dogs, is to reward them, baby or the young child, whenever they're being good. When you want to go have that cup of coffee, you actually want to sit down and say, you know, wonderful, let's help put some more blocks on here. Because the next time the child has nothing to do and starts to feel frustrated or isn't able to do one thing they want to do, they know what else to do. They're not left with empty time. So you've really touched on something extremely important in parenting. Thank you.
That's great. And we know that our dog's brains are similar to a toddler's, so it does exactly all carry across. As a mum of a nearly toddler, I've been reading some books recently, and one, There's No Such Thing as Naughty, is really just like reading a dog book. I'm not through it yet, but talking about how our children can experience emotions, and when they don't have the ability to communicate their needs effectively, how like that is it for our dogs? And I know we're getting off the topic of love, but all of these things, like Linda said, love is putting work into a relationship. So if we can make sure that we're giving those reinforcements in the right place, and we can really support our dogs or our children's or our partner's learning, then that love will just grow in strength, I assume, Linda.
And deepen. It's deepened, that to me is so beautiful, because it's like well, as the Khalil Gibran says, it's like a lotus with 1,000 petals. You know, it's all these different aspects that you discover as time goes on.
And what I love as well, just one thing I think before we maybe perhaps leave you to the rest of your walk, was the fact that when you were talking about remind me of the quote about nurturing and what love was.
You mean Scott Peck?
That's right.
Yeah. Scott Peck? Yeah. He says it's the will to extend yourself for the purpose of nurturing someone else's growth.
And I think when we talked about it before we came on, it also said that you could do that to yourself if it was, if there wasn't somebody else present. So if for any reason you don't have a big network around you, or you've lost a dog recently or whatever, you can still give yourself that self-love to grow and deepen.
Yes, I think that's very important. And I have something with my clients that I call the best friend test. And when I sense they're being very hard on themselves — we're all hard on ourselves — but when they're being particularly hard on themselves, I'd say, well, actually, let's just stop a minute. What would you tell your best friend in this situation? And then they say something. And I say, well, how about if you treat yourself like you would your best friend? So that's something else to remember in terms of self-love.
And aren't our best friends often our dogs? We should always see ourselves through our dog's eyes. And that allows us to feel more love for ourselves, and then in return, share that love with them.
So because the more love you have, the more you have to give.
Yeah, absolutely. So for my just one thing this week, I'd like to invite you to look for those moments when your dogs are doing something small and maybe insignificant, but that they've done that's something you enjoy that makes you feel that moment of love for them of their own accord and reward them for it, whether that be with a nice, calm, gentle praise, throwing them a treat or giving them a smooth, whatever it might be that would be rewarding for them. So you're filling up that dopamine bucket for them as well. Focus on the small things.
And for me, it's to remember in love, and that's love, whether it's friendships, partners, children, or your dog, that every time I put in effort, I'm going to get twice back that reward. I'm going to get it in seeing the joy on their face for accomplishing something or pleasing me in a way they didn't know they could. And I'm going to feel wonderful too, because that reflects and causes me to feel good. So it's a double reward for every drop of effort you put in.
Well, we hope you're feeling very loved up now and ready for a lovely month. Next time when we get together, we're going to be talking about the different types of relationships that you have or your dogs may have. So we hope you join us next time. But until then, enjoy the love, spread the love, and happy walking.
Lots of smiles.